The volume.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There is no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. It's got great odds and markets for the NBA, NHL, college basketball, and so much more. It has got awesome new and existing user promotions. It is unquestionably America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get your winnings fast. Now winnings are delivered in as quick as 2 hours. It's a fast turnaround. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay. Discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started right now. Sign up with promo code BOXING so they know that I sent you. Promo code BOXING so they know Chris Mannix sent you their way.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, Dan Rafael is here, longtime boxing writer. You can subscribe to his newsletter over on Substack. It is terrific reading every single day. Check that out. Easiest way to get to it, go to Dan's Twitter account, at DanRafael1. There's a link to it there. And as I said, great content every day from Dan over on Substack. Dan, I should tell our audience, like, full disclosure, I am recording this outdoors at the UCLA campus. Here in picturesque, I think is the appropriate term, Southern California. I am on a basketball assignment, and this was the most convenient place to record this podcast. So if you're watching the video, and you see, trees in the background, or you maybe hear the occasional bird, that would be why.
I would say I think I hear birds chirping in the background. It looks nice.
It's not bad. I can see why people want to attend school here. I chose the Northeast, and I dealt with bitter winters, but is what it is.
Hey man, I grew up in the Northeast also, and I left there 20 plus years ago. So
yeah, it's I can see why it's enjoyable to be out here. All right, Dan, I appreciate you joining me here. A lot to get to this week. I want to start from last weekend with Edgar Berlanga, the super middleweight contender. Coming off two consecutive decision wins, he was knocked down in his last fight. He had an injury in his last fight. He comes back against Steve Rolls, and I think there was an expectation that Steve Rolls was going to be just fodder for Edgar Berlanga. It didn't turn out that way. Rolls went the distance with Berlanga. So third straight fight, Berlanga does not pick up not just a first-round knockout, but a knockout of any kind. And he apparently is dealing with another injury after that. So you have another arm injury with a fighter with a history of arm injuries. So, give me your takeaways from what you saw from Edgar Berlanga.
Well, I got a few things to unpack from what you mentioned. Number one, I like Edgar Berlanga, but first and foremost, been watching him since he turned pro. I'm yet to call him a contender like you did. He's still a prospect, in my opinion. The reason he's in these main event type situations is because his marketability has surpassed his ability so far. Ideally,
which often does, which often is the case.
Yes, yeah. Ideally, you develop the fighter's in-ring ability and the marketability, and they come together, and you have yourself a superstar. His marketability is at the moment a step ahead of his actual ability, and that's why he's able to be in the main event. So all power to him. He did a big crowd at the Madison Square Garden Hulu Theater. They sold the place out. It's like one of the, you know, sixth or seventh or eighth biggest gate they've had for a boxing event there. And as far as going the distance with Steve Rolls, whose only previous loss had been a very forgivable one, a stoppage in the fourth round against Gennady Golovkin in a fight in which he gave Golovkin, you know, a couple of small problems, even if it was brief. But I was not a person that thought that Berlanga was going to go in there and just smoke Steve Rolls and get him out of there in a couple of rounds. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form as a fan, or if I was on his management team or promotion team, to be disappointed that he went the 10-round distance. I don't think that's a bad thing for a younger fighter who had 16 first-round knockouts in a row to now be getting in the professional rounds against, you know, a good guy like Steve Rolls, who's not a bum or anything. He's a solid professional who'd happen to lose against the very best. So going the 10 rounds was not the issue. It was how he looked in the 10 rounds. If he fought a superior fight over those 10 rounds, guys go the distance. You're not going to knock everybody out. I just felt like Edgar is still showing some of those shortcomings. You mentioned an injury, you know, like you said, he hurt the biceps in the previous fight back in the fall on the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder 3 undercard in a win, which was a good performance despite the getting knocked down. And particularly when you consider that he overcame a biceps injury that occurred in the third round of the fight. Now he was talking after this particular victory against Rolls, a little bit of a problem with his elbow on the same arm on the left side in the early part of that fight. But again, it was really the performance. It looked flat. He looked like he didn't know how to cut off the ring, that he spent a lot of time following Steve Rolls around, didn't seem to let the hands go like he often would, maybe thinking about that knockdown that he took in the previous fight. You know, as they were talking about on the broadcast, a lot of voices in that corner, you know, good people in the corner. Obviously, he trusts his father, who's been with him from, you know, as a professional. You know, Kay Caroma, an outstanding trainer who's been involved with many fighters over the years, and also his main trainer, Andre Rozier. All good boxing guys and people he trusts and stuff. But it's hard. I just don't see. I've never seen a successful corner where you've got three people talking at the same time. They can say what they want, but that's got to change in my estimation. And also, maybe he's not as good as we thought he was. He's still a fine prospect. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to slag on the guy like a lot of people have been. I still want to see him succeed. And these are the growing pains he's going through. But he's got heavy feet. I'm no trainer, but I've watched enough boxing to know when guys don't move like certain guys. And that's going to be a problem when he faces more technically skilled fighters. His feet are a mess.
Yeah, I want to say, in fairness to Berlanga, I didn't feel like Steve Rolls came to win that fight.
That's fair.
I felt like Rolls came to win the Golovkin fight back, you know, was outgunned, but I felt like he came to win, or he had that good second round against Golovkin, and he was throwing, letting his hands go in that fight. Against Berlanga, it just felt like he was determined not to be a knockout victim, and for most of the fight, he fought that way. But I agree with a lot of things that you said there. Many voices in that corner, which, you know, if you've got 60 seconds, you want to streamline information. Like, you want the best and soundest advice and not potentially conflicting words coming to you. And I think it's also fair to say, like, you know, did we overrate Berlanga during that 16 fight first round knockout streak? Like,
there's no question about it, because in those 16 knockouts, again, it was not, you know, to Top Rank's credit, his promoter, their team, Brad Goodman, the matchmaker, and Bruce Trampler, they were trying to give him opponents that they thought he would extend, that would extend him into the second round, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round, whatever. And, you know, he just happened to be able to clip them and get rid of them. But I don't think that in the long run helped him in terms of his, you know, bettering his abilities and his skills. Did it help his marketability, like we talked about before? Absolutely. You know, when you've got, you know, a lot of fans getting excited, media getting excited, certainly the broadcasters getting excited, it's hard not to see that sensational situation when he's just laying everybody to waste even if they're not top guys. But I don't have a problem with a knockout guy going the distance. Like, for example, when he went the distance the first time against Damon Nicholson, you know, he completely dominated him. He let the hands go. He hurt him several times. You know, he was very close to a stoppage. It just so happened the guy was able to survive for the 8 rounds. But I still thought that was an A-level performance for him on the way up. So when the knockout streak ended, you know, I thought that was a good thing from number one, that pressure is off. And number two, in the win that went the distance, he looked pretty good. And then you come up with what happened in the next fight against Koceras, which was the injury and the knockdown. That I thought that was, you know, in the long run, probably good. Never good to get injured, obviously. But at least he was able to show, you know, I've got what's inside to overcome that type of adversity. And on top of that, get up from a knockdown, you know, and still win on a, you know, handily in terms of a decision on what was not your best night. So I felt like the first two distance fights were not a bad thing. And he still won, still looked pretty good. You know, so I think it's fair to say that the most recent performance on this past Saturday against Rolls, the combination of going the distance again, potentially dealing with another injury. And on top of that, just in those 10 rounds, not looking good. It happens. You know, I'm not ready to jump off the bandwagon or anything like that, but you just want to see, you want to see some improvements and some more out of him.
The plan is to bring him back in early June, June 11th, I believe is the penciled in date. Just got to be careful with how you match him and, you know, keep putting him in with guys that are durable. But maybe make an adjustment with that corner, at least have only one person talking the entire time and see what you got from there. He's still pretty young, but still miles away from being a legit contender at 168. All right, I want to move to another fight from this past weekend, the makeshift main event over on DAZN, where with Virgil Ortiz bowing out with a blood condition, you have Blair Cobbs and Alexis Rocha stepping up into the main event. It was a fun fight, Dan. You know, sitting ringside for it, you had two guys that were, you know, prone to action, like that wanted to go out there and make it a fight, and they did. Went close to 10 rounds. Alexis Rocha picks up a knockout win. That's the second consecutive fight, Dan. I've been really impressed with Alexis Rocha, who fights at 147, is very technically sound with a really good amateur background, and continues to show that he has real power at that weight class. So, and I said this to him in the ring afterwards, I'm like, you are now no longer, to me, a prospect. You are a contender in this division. And I think that's fair. What was your takeaway from watching Rocha versus Cobbs?
Well, first and foremost, like you said, it was a very entertaining fight. I mean, I was tweeting about it. You know, I was going back and forth between the DAZN broadcast as well as the ESPN broadcast, but I was able to watch most of, you know, Cobbs and Rocha because it wasn't in conflict with the main event on the other broadcast. But I thought it was an exciting fight. I knew when Golden Boy announced that fight in the first place, when they were willing to put those two guys in with each other, that I thought it would be a good fight, just having seen both of them in the past. I thought Rocha would win the fight, and you know, all respect to Blair Cobbs. You know, he is got a very, very giant personality. He wants to be seen. He comes to fight, but I don't know if his skill level is at the same level as, like you mentioned, the amateur background of a Rocha, and that is going to put you at a deficit. So, you know, Cobbs, I think, has sort of gotten to a certain level. I'm not necessarily sure he can ever get to the next level. Rocha, by doing what he's been doing in recent fights, particularly with that win against Cobbs, is showing maybe he can get to the next level. And he does have the loss to Rashidi Ellis, who is also an outstanding amateur. So I'm not 100% sold on Rocha as being a bona fide contender. But I think what the Cobbs fight told me is if one of the two has a chance to be a actual contender, it is, in fact, Alexis Rocha.
Yeah, a younger fighter too, just 24 years old. Cobbs is, what, 33 at this point? So he has that going for him. And look, I don't think you throw Alexis Rocha in with Virgil Ortiz in his next fight or any kind of top five welterweight. But he was talking afterwards about facing a Michael McKinson, and I'd be on board for that fight. McKinson had a very, very unwatchable fight against Alex Martin.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I want to see that. I want to see Alexis Rocha in with other opponents that are going to be there to fight him. And I mean, you know.
Well, you know, I think for Alexis Rocha, though, like one of the things I think he knows he needs work with is fighting slicker boxers, because Rashidi Ellis is a slick boxer and he was able to win on the back of that. Rocha's got to know that to get to the next level, he can't just win fights where guys stand and trade with them or like with Blair Cobb stick their chin out in front of him. He's got to beat more pure boxers, and McKinson presents that type of challenge.
I just sort of think there's a happy medium between that. You don't have to necessarily fight a guy that's just going to stand and stick your chin out the way you mentioned about Cobb's. You also need to fight a guy that's so utterly negative like McKinson, who's a talented boxer. I'm not going to knock him for that, but he just doesn't make a crowd appealing fight. And Alexis Rocha wants to make a crowd appealing fight. And, you know, it's a sport where you need to please the fans at some point. And there's other, I know McKinson was in the rejiggered co-feature because of the fact that his original opponent was Virgil, who fell out. But I don't think there's going to be any groundswell to say, we got to see Rocha against McKinson there. You know, if you sit and spend some time looking at the different organization rankings or box rec or whatever, you're going to come up with some other welterweights that might be more appealing that could also give him the type of look that you want to get him, that you're mentioning about maybe a guy that's a bit more of a slick fighter than a Blair Cobbs is. But the good thing about he's in a position where, you know, he's on the upswing. There's going to be opportunities. He's in a good division. You know, he seemed to draw. I mean, even though it was the co-feature became the main event, it felt like, I mean, you were there. I wasn't, but it felt like he had a lot of fans there in the stands cheering him up.
He did.
So those are all positives.
He did. Yeah. He has a fan base. I can't speak to how big that fan base is, but it's a fan base in Southern California. And Golden Boy would be wise to keep fostering that, whether it's putting him on as somewhere on an undercard, co-main event, whatever you want to say of more of their SoCal fights in the future. Quick thought, though, on Virgil Ortiz. I thought it was really interesting speaking to Bernard Hopkins on air during that fight where, now look, Virgil Ortiz, officially, it was a blood condition that forced him out of that fight. But yet Bernard Hopkins lending voice to some of the whispers we heard during the week that maybe Virgil Ortiz needs to move up in weight. Maybe he's done at 147. Bernard told me unequivocally that he believes Virgil should test the waters at 154 in his next fight. I thought that was interesting because Virgil has worked pretty hard to put himself in that top contender position for a welterweight title. Now, you know, if you believe his promoter, and Bernard is a good eye for these things, you know, he should be bound for 154. What do you think of that?
I think it's up to Virgil Ortiz and his team to be honest with themselves. Can you really effectively make welterweight without putting yourself in dramatic physical harm's way? I mean, you and I have been around boxing long enough to know that certain guys, you know, they can make the weight. It may be a struggle, but that's part of the game. That's what they sign up for. But it's not unhealthy for them to get down to whatever weight that they choose that they're fighting at. Other guys, you know, becomes a health risk to try to make whatever the weight class you're trying to be in. So Virgil, perhaps with a doctor, with his manager, with his father, there and with Golden Boy, you know, with their conversation also, whether it's, you know, Eric Gomez, Oscar, Bernard, you know, just have a real private conversation. Be honest about it. Are you willing, capable, and medically able to make that weight and be effective? If the answer is yes, then give it another go. Because like you said, he's in a position where I think he's number one in the WBO rankings, where he's, you know, in a position to be in a world title fight at some point in the very near future. If he goes to 154, that process probably doesn't start entirely over because he does have credibility from what he has done in recent fights at welterweight, where he's just blitzed everybody and, you know, not elite competition, but pretty solid guys for the last couple of years. Remember, he was, when he started out for the first several years of his career, he was a junior welterweight, and then he ended up moving up to welterweight. He really hasn't been a welterweight for all that long. So, you know, I respect Bernard Hopkins' opinion a lot, and he certainly is around Virgil Ortiz from the standpoint of involved in terms of his promotion. So if that's something that Bernard said, you have to take that seriously. But again, I think it's totally going to be up to Virgil Ortiz and his, you know, closest people involved in his career, mainly his father and his management, to be honest with themselves. Can we do this? Is 147 where we should be, or should we try to, you know, go up to 154? Look, he's had tremendous power at 140 and 147. You know, it feels like, I mean, you never know until you see them in action in the new weight class, but it feels like he's the kind of guy that's just a naturally heavy-handed fighter, that if he's fighting at 154, he's still going to be able to punch, you know, very effectively. You know, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with when he comes back, you know, when he gets better and he's good to go, to, you don't have to go all the way to 154. See how you're not fighting in a championship fight. See how you feel, fight at 150, you know, kind of like what Gennady Golovkin did when he fought Steve Rolls. You know, he was thinking maybe super middleweight in the future. He ended up going back at middleweight and winning a belt. But when they fought, they did it at 164, right between the middleweight and super middleweight division. For a guy like Virgil, maybe that's the way to go. See if you can, you know, how you feel by putting on 3, 4, 5 pounds and giving a go. And eventually, certainly, he's going to be a junior middleweight. You know, maybe not right away, but certainly in the next few fights. But I hope he can still make welterweight. There's so many attractive matches and quality fights. You'd like to see him as a younger guy, you know, with a potential legacy in front of him, try to start that out with a welterweight championship.
I think he just turned, 24?
Young.
So
yeah.
He's still young. I would like to see him start with a nutritionist. Like, you know, go to the perfecting athletes people. Go to somebody that does this on a professional level, because I don't think he has that at this point. And that often is really effective. I mean, we know most notably and famously, at least recently, when Teofimo Lopez linked up with the top nutritionist, he went out there and had a second round knockout of Richard Comey and then outboxed Vasily Lomachenko. So, like, it works. It works. So I'd like to see him take that stance first, try to go a professional. I know they're expensive. Sergio Mora and I have this discussion all the time about how, you know, how much money Sergio spent during his career on a nutritionist, but the value is there. Like, you know this, Dan, every time one of these top athletes work with one of the top nutritionists, they may hate how much money they spend on it, but it works. Like, how many times have you seen an athlete be like, boy, I didn't need that nutritionist. That never really worked. Like, it doesn't always guarantee success, but more often than not, the end result, if it's a positive, is partly because you brought somebody in that helped you make that weight in a more natural way.
I'll take a line from my dear friend, Larry Merchant, who many years ago talking about, I might've even been, post Mike Tyson getting knocked out by Buster Douglas, where remember he had gotten rid of the trainer that had led him to the championship, Kevin Rooney. He was working with new trainers who were ill-prepared for that night in Tokyo. And I believe this is what he was talking about. If you have secretariat, you just don't get some guy off the track to get on his back. You get the best jockey out there. And if you look at a boxing, if you believe you're at that championship top form level, you don't just get anybody to make your meals or to figure out your weight situation or figure out, you know, the best way to be healthy as you're making weight. You go get the best out there. And that costs money, but it's an investment. Your body and what you can do with it, that's your business in the sport of boxing and in any sport for an athlete. And to put yourself in the best position to make that giant money that these champions can make at the top level, it may cost quite a bit at the beginning, but ultimately, if it is successful, it's going to probably be worth it. And maybe there's a way, you know, be creative. Come up with a plan. I'll pay you X. And, you know, if I get here, you know, I'll cut you in for 2%, whatever the point is. My point is it's you're investing in yourself. And, there are people and places that can assist these athletes in that situation. I'm not sure what Virgil's particular situation is as it relates to his own nutrition situation. But I know that I have seen the impact that some of these folks have done with these guys. And for the most part, it seems like it's effective.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, before we leave the Golden Boy scene, some of the whispers I was hearing while I was out there is that Jaime Munguia, after having the negotiation with Jermall Charlo just blow up and leave us with Charlo Maciek-Sulecki, which I've discussed last week on the podcast.
Don't make me sick, my man.
No, I'm not going to go into that. No, this actually might. I'm curious if you find this appealing. I think there's interest, strong interest on the Munguia side to make Munguia against Daniel Jacobs sometime in the summer.
That's
which
a solid fight.
I know Jacobs officially coming off a loss, but that's a disputed kind of defeat. And I think he still has some value in a fight like that. And that would be Munguia's toughest test.
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, I mean, Danny Jacobs is a seasoned pro. I know he got the official loss against John Ryder. I thought he won the fight. It was close, but I thought he won. I mean, Danny has only lost at the absolute top level. He lost a close fight against Triple G. That was by no means.
He's made you, though, Dan. Like, Danny's made you wonder what he has left, because the last two fights, he has not looked like the guy we saw against Canelo, against Golovkin, against Derevyanchenko at the highest level.
Well, that's absolutely fair. I mean, Danny is not a young spring chicken these days. He's got, 35 plus fights. He's been around for quite a number of years. you know, is that one of the greatest comeback stories in the history of sports, the way he was able to basically essentially be on his deathbed with cancer and not only come back to participate in his chosen sport, but to win a world championship and, you know, be involved in some huge events. But look, Jaime Munguia against Danny Jacobs, in my book, anytime you can put two guys that are somewhat interesting to watch, that have, you know, at least some kind of fan base, that are known commodities to the boxing fans, and you match them up together, I don't think you can ever really go wrong. It may not be a championship fight, but it's a lot more, you know, if you said to me, Jaime Munguia is fighting Danny Jacobs, and it's not for a title, who cares? I mean, that's a much more interesting fight just by the names than sometimes you have when you have a world title fight. So by all means, I mean, you know, again, those are hard fights to make, maybe potentially that issues come up about how much we're going to get paid. I know Danny Jacobs is very used to making a lot of money in recent times. But look, to me, if that was something that was, you know, in the midst of a nice DAZN schedule, sign me up. I'm definitely watching that fight. I like both fighters. They've both been in some good fights. Both good guys, both make, you know, I think that would be a good promotion. Why not?
Yeah, I'd almost like to see it too at 160 if Jacobs can make that. I mean, he's now gone vegan, and it's been suggested to me that he can make 160. And look, he's had three fights above the 160-pound limit since the Canelo stuff. That one was Julio Cesar Chavez, which was just a farce. And even in that fight, he took some hits from Chavez.
Well, Chavez was the one that came in much, you know, he had his own
issue. Way heavier, yeah. He's,
I mean, look, if you make Munguia Jacobs, it's not necessarily a world championship fight. So, you know, again, if Munguia is willing. And
somewhere in the middle, yeah.
Why not? What's the problem if you fight at 163 or something? Like, who cares? I mean.
Yeah, I agree. Munguia himself, I think, is no problem.
Fights are fine. I mean, you can't have, you know, a guy that's like fighting in a welterweight championship, fighting way over the weight. It's not for a title, but at this type of situation, there's nothing that says they can't sign for a contract for whatever weight limit they decide.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's dive deep into the negotiation sphere once again. Vasily Lomachenko has bowed out, understandably, from a June fight against George Kambosos. Lomachenko, of course, in his native Ukraine, you know, part of the Territorial Defense Force defending his country against the Russian invasion, has decided he's not going to leave to train for a fight against George Kambosos. So Kambosos and his promoter, Lou DiBella, have moved on to Devin Haney, or moved back at least to Devin Haney. They have made an offer to Devin Haney. I've been told that offer is virtually identical to the offer that was presented to Lomachenko, that Lomachenko accepted you know, several weeks ago.
This is not even like a secret. This is what Lou DiBella has said to me, and I think other reporters on the record.
Yeah.
We have offered him basically the exact same offer that we offered Lomachenko, except changed the name in the letter.
Yeah, and that what that basically does is make Devin Haney, you know, he tweeted out at some point in the last few weeks, I'll take the exact same offer. Look, so it's sort of put up or shut up
at chase on this, okay? And again, I'm a big Devin Haney fan. I like the kid a lot. Kambosos is extremely likable also. But if you're Devin Haney, how do you not take this fight? If you don't take this fight, what are you doing with your career? He's got a world title. He's defended it several times. He's looked pretty good. His level of competition has gone up a little bit here and there. He's fought like the guys like the Jojo Diaz and, you know, got the victory there. Now you have the opportunity that you say you want. You stood next to George Kambosos with you in an interview on DAZN after he defeated Jojo Diaz, 1 week after Kambosos had won his belts in the Teofimo Lopez fight. You can have the same deal they offered Lomachenko, who was certainly higher on the food chain within boxing than Devin Haney is, but you're going to get the same exact offer, and you can go and make the fight for the legitimate undisputed championship. I have defended Devin Haney time and time again, saying that Teofimo Lopez and George Kambosos, while they're tremendous fighters and they're unified champions and they should be ranked number one in the weight class, they are not undisputed. They cannot be undisputed until they have that WBC actual title that Devin Haney owns. Go make the undisputed fight, make a legacy, show the balls to go on the road. You may, you know, be not the crowd favorite. A lot of people would favor Devin Haney most probably to win the fight. You know, be quiet, stop chirping, get off Twitter, get on the plane, go get your vaccine, and go to Australia and kick some ass if that's what you think you can do.
Yeah, I agree. And if it means a rematch in Australia, in the U.S., take it. Like, take it. And
what else are you doing? Like, there's some other...
There's nothing.
What else is there? I mean, are you not going to be fighting Loma?
There's zero.
You're not fighting Teofimo Lopez. You're not getting a fight with Ryan Garcia just yet. You're not going to probably get a fight with Tank Davis. He's off doing, you know, his business. He's got a pay-per-view fight coming up. So those are all the, you know, not, there's other quality lightweights, but those are the main names. What else, who else is going to bring you that kind of money and recognition and glory if you can win?
You can, if you take that fight and if you win that fight and if you win the rematch, you can get anything that you want. Whether it's the end of 2022 or early 2023, you will get Ryan Garcia if that's what you want. You will get Gervonta Davis if that's what you want. You know Lomachenko is chomping at the bit to get his hands on all four belts. This is the path to doing that. Now, Devin's out there on social media as we record this saying all the right things, saying I'm on my way, using some very colorful language to say some of those things.
Yes.
I hope he means it. I hope that Devin Haney, Eddie Hearn, and Eddie's kind of said, you know, Devin should take this. Like he's publicly said that.
By the way, I do think
I hope they accept it.
I don't think he's like trying to avoid George Kambosos. You know, if you spend 5 minutes talking to Devin Haney, you know that he is a guy that I believe that he truly does want to test himself against the best guys. And frankly, he'll probably beat a lot of the top guys. You don't have to worry about George Kambosos' desire to fight top guys, because here's a guy that comes off a massive victory against Teofimo Lopez, his biggest payday, a great victory, a tremendous fight. He's going home where he really probably could have fought anybody and still made sizable amounts of money. But he said, and I won't say shock of his, I've talked to people in his team who are like, we could have gotten him a much easier fight. And he's like, no, I want a real guy. Bring me Ryan Garcia. Bring me Teofimo Lopez, George Campbell, Devin Haney. Bring me these top guys. Bring me Lomachenko. He didn't want to just go have a victory lap fight. He wanted a real serious opponent. He got one in Lomachenko. For obvious reasons, it's not happening. Devin Haney certainly fits that bill. Tank Davis is not available. They did talk to the Ryan Garcia team. The timing just doesn't work out for Ryan to be the juke fight, because he fights, you know, in a few weeks in early April. And it just wouldn't, you can't wait to see what happens in that fight and still plan a fight for June. So maybe they could, you know, if he wins and there's no rematch, I think they could maybe revisit a Ryan Garcia fight at the end of the year. But at this point, you know, for both George and for Haney, it's the fight that makes sense for them, for their bank accounts, for their legacy, for the fans of boxing, for the sport itself, and for the sake of finding out once and for all who's the undisputed champion of the world. And I don't have to go on Twitter and explain to people why George Kambosos is not the undisputed champion of the world.
Yeah, hopefully we can then rubbish the franchise belt forever and just, at least for the time being. I'm with you. Just take the fight, Devin. It'd be a good fight. And look, we've been disappointed, Dan, by the lightweight division in recent years. Maybe this is the year we're not, like, maybe this is the year we get, let's say, two fights between Devin Haney and George Kambosos, and maybe Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis can get on the same page.
I know.
Come on. Maybe I'm just being overly optimistic. I'm just an optimistic guy, Dan.
You're not going to get Charlo Andre. You're not going to get Garcia, Gervonta. Life goes on.
Charlo Andre at 168 when they're both 40. Let's do that. Let's call that.
That might actually happen. I can see it.
Oh,
come on. We got Charlo and Selesky. We got Demetrius against
Zach Parker.
Zach Parker. There you go. So, I mean, I'm just.
That Zach Parker fight is not terrible. Like, that's, you know, it's, no, it is what it is.
They're terrible. It's that they're not the right fights.
Oh, the Charlo Selesky fight is terrible. Like, that's, yeah, that's that taking Demetrius Andrade's leftovers.
I have to say, though, and you know me a long time, I've maybe like chilled out a little bit as I've done this longer and longer. Like in my younger days, I might get truly like crazy and start going mental about certain fights getting made. But I'm pretty chill these days. It takes a lot to really offend me when it comes to making a certain match. But I got to say, I'm offended by Charlo versus Selesky. I'm offended by it. I'm offended by it because it's one thing when Selesky fought Danny Jacobs. You know, I think he was undefeated at the time. You know, he fought on Demetrius Andrade's in his hometown. You know, he only had the one loss, but then he had the two fights twice where he pulled out against Munguia. It gets to a point, it's like, I know exactly what's going to happen. I think you never know 100%, but I have no desire or need to watch that fight. Now, all credit to Showtime. That's one of the fights that they announced in the last, about a week or so ago, where they put together their spring and summer schedule. Their schedule overall is outstanding, in my opinion. And nothing is ever going to be perfect. So I'm not going to rag on them, because I believe that Steven Espinosa and the PBC folks and the teams that work to, TGB Promotions, Tom Brown, they try to make the best fights that they can. So, I'm not going to harp on, it's not their fault. It just, shit happens. And that's just a bad matchup. The rest of them, I'm all good with, but I'm offended I'm offended by that fight.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, clearly, as well. All right, let's finish with a fight happening on Showtime this weekend. Tim Zhu, the son of Kostya Zhu, undefeated junior middleweight. He is in action. Maybe, is this his toughest test to date? Terrell Gaucher, the former U.S. Olympian from 2012 when he fought on the U.S. Olympic team. He fights out in Minnesota. I'm fascinated, Dan, by Tim Zhu, because he's had a pretty good career fighting over in Australia, beat a decent fringe contender in Dennis Hogan. He beat a former champion in Jeff Horn. He's checking the boxes as he kind of moves up the junior middleweight ranks. I guess the question for me is, like, do you look at Tim Zhu as being the real deal?
I do. I do look at him as the real deal. I mean, we're going to find out. I think Terrell Gaucher is an experienced fighter, an Olympian that got that pedigree. His only losses as a pro were decisions against, good quality guys like Arislandi Lara, although that was an extraordinarily unwatchable fight that most of the crowd at Barclays Center walked out of in about the ninth round. But nonetheless, it was a close fight. The other loss was to Erickson Lubin, who was a top contender. So those are forgivable kind of losses. You ask if Tim Zhu was the real deal. Go back about 3 years ago, maybe it was even 4 years ago, whatever it was, when I do my prospect list at the end of the year. And I had Tim Zhu in that top, 12 or 15, several years ago, having watched many of his fights from Australia, because that's just the kind of dork I am. I watched a lot of his fights. And I've seen rapid improvement in the last few fights. He seems to be more confident. His punch selection is outstanding. And one thing that is absolutely uncanny, and the viewers on Showtime Saturday, if they watched his father, Kostya Zhu, fight, if you didn't know it was Tim Zhu and you just saw him from afar, you'd be like, oh, that must be an old Kostya Zhu tape, because he stands like his father. He holds his hands like his father. The sort of physical mannerisms that he has in terms of the way, he moves and punches looks like his father. He's a little, obviously, a bigger weight class than his father. His father was a 140-pound champion, and Tim is a 154-pound fighter. But he looks very much like his old man. When I see him, it makes me feel old, because when I was just starting out covering professional boxing, I was covering Kostya Zhu's fights when he was a top junior welterweight and ended up becoming undisputed and voting for him later for the Hall of Fame. And to see his son develop the way he is, I've had many conversations over time about the sons of fathers, of great fathers, who don't necessarily reach the level of the old man. I can't say that Tim Zhu is going to reach the level of his father, who is a Hall of Famer, who is one of the greatest junior welterweights in boxing history. But if anybody's got a chance, I think Tim Zhu is one of those guys. And, we're going to find out on Saturday another answer to those many questions when he fights Gaucher. I kind of like the fact that he's fighting on Showtime, because that's where Kostya Zhu had his biggest fights. He was under contract with Showtime in the early 2000s and had, the major fights against, Ricky Hatton, which he lost the end of his career, certainly when he became undisputed against Zab Judah. So I like that aspect of it. But he's an entertaining fighter to watch. He's got the last name, which obviously makes it somewhat interesting just because of that. So to me, I'm very excited to watch him. Happy he's coming to America. And by the way, it's not like it's a one-off. This fight, he is already the mandatory for the Brian Castaño WBO belt. And so he's supposed to be next up for the winner of the rematch between Charlo and Castaño, assuming they don't have another draw.
Yeah, he's proven everything he could possibly prove at the domestic level. His last fight, he showed he could box against a guy like Takeshi Inoue, who his only loss before that was to Jaime Munguia, a tough guy. So he's shown power, he's shown skill, and now we're going to see as he takes it to another level. I mean, if he dispatches Gaucher pretty easy, I'll be really impressed. I'll say that much. To the point where you'd start to look at him and be like, all right, well, Do we think that, I think it's the WBO belt that he's in line for. Like, correct, whoever wins out of Castaño against Jermell Charlo, like, do you think they are going to want to fight him? Now, maybe, because there might be some money in it, but he's going to be dangerous. Like, I'm going to look at him really dangerous, because I see a lot of the tools.
He's going to be
right. Like, I mean, would they drop it? Like, would they drop the belt or, you know, fight him?
I mean, it would be kind of silly to drop it. I mean, when there's going to be money there, Showtime's going to want to, you know, they're not just putting on Tim Zhu just to put him on. They obviously know and have designs on doing business with him in the future, and that means in championship fights against the likes of a Castaño.
They should go to Australia, man. Like, whoever wins that fight, if you're going to fight Tim Zhu, go to Australia. Like, he's wildly popular out there.
Tim Zhu's whole thing with Tim Zhu right now is, like, he and his team have said, we want to come to America. You know, and his quotes were, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, if you really want to become a legend in boxing, you got to come and conquer America. He's having that same mentality that many of the British fighters had, whether it was Joe Calzaghe or Bricky Hatton or Tyson Fury or any number of these, British top guys that ultimately made their way over to the United States to make their names. And Tim Zhu has saw what his father was able to do. And now he's at the stage of his career where he's looking to come here and do the same thing. And I think the American fans are going to like him. He's got a fun style to watch. He also has, in my opinion, he's got charisma to him. You know, he's got a little swagger about him. And I kind of like that.
I agree. I think the American fans are going to like him a lot. And I think he's going to have a successful career. I think he is the goods. He's got a very limited amateur background, which worries me a little bit. But what he's shown in the professional ranks against guys like Horn, Hogan, in a way, if he looks that way against Gaucher, we're going to have something here, I think, in Tim Zhu. Real quick, so I don't want to go too deep in this because I'm not, I mean, I kind of know how this fight's going to go. Josh Warrington, Kiko Martinez over in the UK this Saturday on DAZN. Kiko Martinez got the title, good for him, but like, this is a gift to Josh Warrington. Like, Josh Warrington with a chance to get that IBF belt back against Kiko, who I don't know how much he has left, Dan. Like, I think he expended whatever he has left in that knockout win over Kid Galahad. And now here he's presented to Josh Warrington, like, in a weird way, in the same way that, like, Charles Martin was once presented to Anthony Joshua. It's like, you know, here's the title.
It's a fair point, but you still got to fight the fights, number one. And I always think of that. And again, I'm not saying Kiko Martinez is going to win, but let me make this point. And it actually struck me because I happened to see odds on the fight the other day. And I want to say that Warrington was like a minus 400 favorite. Kiko was like plus 300. I don't gamble on fights ever. You know, my gambling would be like if I put down, you know, $2 on the Yankees to win the World Series, you know, just for fun. But when I see those numbers, I'm like, maybe you do bet on Kiko. And I say this is the reason why. First of all, when they fought a few years ago, it was a very close fight. Warrington got the victory. But if my memory serves, it was like either a split or majority decision. It wasn't like a lights out performance. This is before Warrington had won his world title. It's obviously many fights after Kiko had lost.
I'll tell you now, majority decision, 2-1-16, 1-12, okay. Then 1-14.
So that tells me that I watched that fight. I don't really remember it, but I know I saw the fight. But anyway, nonetheless, it was a competitive kind of fight.
About 5 years ago now.
Even if Warrington won. Okay, so they are familiar with each other, and Warrington, in his mind, knows that he can be that the guy can be competitive with him, and Kiko knows that he was competitive with him. Now, move past to what's happened in the recent past. You mentioned the fight that Kiko got the title back against Kid Galahad. Massive, massive underdog. Handpicked to go to Galahad's hometown for the homecoming defense. He didn't just win. He absolutely destroyed Galahad. Two massive knockdowns and a crushing, you know, the second one being just that devastating knockout. Destroyed him. Confidence build. That's a confidence builder right there. This is the fight of his life, and he ends up winning in a massively unexpected manner. Now you take a look at Warrington. He gives up the IBF title, which ultimately now Kiko Martinez has, and he gets utterly laid to waste by Mauricio Lara. Before that fight, completely obscure and unknown. Again, handpicked, bring him over from South America, put him in Warrington's hometown, gets destroyed. And then he comes back in the rematch. And again, it only went two rounds, but Warrington did not look very good in those two rounds. I went back and watched that actually just a couple of days ago. And I feel like if there wasn't a headbutt and that fight goes on, Warrington's in another heap of trouble in that fight. So I feel like Josh
Warrington, I think a lot of guys, Dan, that face Lara are going to be in some trouble.
So Warrington's confidence
just a beast.
Is got to be at the lowest it's ever been. Kiko's confidence got to be among the highest it's ever been just based on what he did just a few months ago in regaining the title. So my point is this, to make a long story short. If you see that guy who you feel like is a little bit in a good spot and he's the plus 300 against the big favorite who's looked like crap in his last two fights, whose confidence level has to be at a real down spot, you know, the whatever the difference is between the two, that gap closes a little bit in my mind. So I'm not totally shocked by an upset just because how good Kiko looked in the last fight and how bad Warrington looked in the last two. Now, this could be completely wrong and Warrington to go out there and be lights out and get rid of the guy. But, you know, I suspect that there's going to be some intrigue in that fight, that even if Warrington wins, is not going to be like some kind of devastating blowout.
Yeah, I don't think it's devastating. Well, I don't think it's a devastating knockout. I think it could be a blowout only because Kiko's, I get everything you're saying. You kind of, in a way, might be talking me into Kiko in a strange way. But
I feel like I'm picking him. I'm just saying I can.
I know.
Since
the Warrington fight in 2017, Kiko has not fought a quality opponent since facing Kid Galahad. And I'm sure some people in the UK would tell you Kid Galahad is not that great either. But Kid Galahad had a very good record going into that fight.
The Kid Galahad that Warrington struggled against The reason he gave up the title was because he didn't want to fight Galahad in a mandated rematch. He had life and death with him in their original meeting as a mandatory.
Yeah. Yeah. But Kiko's wins have come against, you know, sub 500, around 500, double digit loss kind of guys. He got knocked out by Gary
machine.
Russell. He is, well, I mean,
listen, I was
the upset machine versus one guy. Right?
No. In 2000, I think it was, you have his record in front of you.
I have his record in front of me.
2013. I was at the Revel Casino in Atlantic City, and he was a big underdog against Jonathan Romero, who at the time, I believe, was the IBF junior featherweight champion. And Kiko Martinez scored a big upset that night, too. They had big plans for Romero. I believe he was undefeated at the time.
He was 23-0. Good call. Yeah, 2013.
He was undefeated. He was, you know, HBO was interested in him. And this was like supposed to be a showcase type of fight for him. And what happened? Kiko ended up pulling that big upset, too. Now, that's not that Jonathan Romero went on and had some glorious career. But at the time, again, not to make myself sound like an old guy, but that was a big upset at that point. And so it's not like Kiko was, I mean, he hasn't had a lot of them, but one time might be an accident. Two times is kind of a trend.
Yeah. All right. Well, two, Jonathan Romero, Kid Galahad, and now Josh Warrington in the rematch.
He was competitive.
That's right, Dan Rayfield.
Who he was competitive with the first time.
He was majority decision the first time around. I just think, what's how old is Kiko right now? What's he?
He's probably about
36. He's 36 now.
Reborn.
Where you have me a little bit there is, I think you're right. Like, it's not like, it's not like you saw Warrington come out and avenge that loss to Lara. Like, he looked like he might have been on a path towards a similar destruction if that fight have been able to continue. So we don't know yet. We don't know what Warrington is after the Lara loss.
Well, like, I'll put it like this.
Is he still a shell?
To me, if Kiko Martinez beats Warrington, it's much, much less of an upset, much less of an upset than when Lara beat Warrington. And even when Kiko beat Kid Galahad, by the odds, by general consensus, by conventional wisdom, whatever terminology you want to use, if Warrington loses, it's going to be considered an upset, but it is not the level of the upset that we've seen in so many other fights. It's not a Kambosos Teofimo Lopez level upset. To me, it's a much closer fight on paper than I think a lot of people are giving it credit for. Again, I'm not sitting here saying I'm picking Kiko to win, but I don't discount him whatsoever for the many reasons I just illustrated.
Oh, pretty good little Saturday then. Kiko Martinez, Josh Warrington in the afternoon in the U.S. Terrell Gaucher tries to pull off an upset against Tim Zhu. Not bad. Not the most high profile, but I'll take it.
Yeah, we
I'll
got also
some competitive fights.
We've been talking about the lightweight division. You got the return of Miguel Burchelt coming up from 130 to 135 on Saturday.
I feel like that's a... Let's let Miguel Burchelt win a fight or two at 135 before I get excited about Miguel Burchelt again.
You know what? He may not be in with the most high profile opponent, Nakatila, but one thing about Miguel Burchelt is he always makes a good... He does.
I just want to see if he... Like, give me like a Burchelt, like Jamel Herring fight or something later on this year, and I'll get excited about Miguel Burchelt coming back into the ring. Not at this point, in his comeback. So make sure you subscribe to Dan's newsletter over on Substack. It's a great read every single day. You can check it out via his Twitter account at DanRaphael1. Follow him on Facebook and Instagram as well. Dan, always good to catch up with you, man. Thanks for joining me.
Chris, thank you so much. And try not to get a sunburn out there in the park in LA.
When we come back, my conversation with Tim Zhu.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of that.
I'm like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't Nick?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in a bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. With just a few taps on the app, you can have Angie tackle your home service project start to finish.
With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. It's your one-stop shop. Angie can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. They get the difficulties that can come with home projects. They get it. Why not make it as simple as possible? Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com or download the app today.
Fight fans, take your best shot with a $150 bonus in site credit guaranteed from FanDuel Sportsbook. It doesn't matter if your fighter gets knocked out or tapped out. New customers get an instant $150 bonus in site credit on your first bet of $5 or more from March 13th to April 4th. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING to bet on all the biggest boxing matches and UFC fights. Choose from the money line to the method of victory and so much more. And with cash out, the ball's in your court. So you can close out your bet whenever you want before the fight is over. To get your $150 bonus in site credit guaranteed, just sign up with promo code BOXING on the FanDuel Sportsbook app.
A lot of people in the U.S. are clearly familiar with your father, with his career. You're 27 years old. Can you tell me kind of what memories do you have of your father's boxing career?
In terms of his career, I remember specifically the Zab Judah moment. I was there present for the Jesse James layer in Melbourne. Cesar Chavez and just the real big fights.
When you were, even at that age, when you're watching your father's fights, are you thinking, I want to do this too? Or are you thinking something else?
I don't think I was thinking that, but I remember after each fight, my brother and cousins would always put the gloves on it and start doing a bit of sparring in the backyard, you know, so we would always imitate and always think that just imitate the whole fight situation. I don't remember at that time if I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be a boxer. I guess there would have been a thought there, of course. But, yeah, it was always part of growing up for us.
Is it fact or fiction, the story I read about you breaking your grandfather's jaw when you were 3 years old?
No, that's fact. That's fact. I think I dislocated the jaw.
How did that happen?
Man, I don't really know, but when my dad tells me the story, it was I told my grandpa to put the gloves on, and so I decided to give him a straight right on the chin, and that's all it took.
So you had some power even back then.
Yeah, it started early.
So you were more kind of interested in American soccer, football for a while, weren't you? Was that kind of what the path you were going to go on early on?
To a certain extent, my dad and parents didn't want me, I guess, to do boxing. So they taught me soccer and be able to play team sports and stuff like that. But yeah, that was never going to happen.
So your dad was against you becoming a boxer early on?
I don't think he was against me. I guess he didn't want me to become a professional, maybe. I don't know. You know, this sport's quite hard, and it's not for the faint-hearted. Mm-hmm.
When did you decide to get on this path? When did you decide that I want to make boxing a career?
I think when I turned professional would have been 20 years old. Mm. Just turned 20. I tried to do other things, and it wasn't for me. This is what's for me.
When you were an amateur, did you take to it pretty well? I mean, what do you remember about kind of your amateur success?
Oh, look, amateur, I only had like 30, 35 fights or so. So I didn't have too many fights. But yeah, I remember at the end of it, it was our population in Australia isn't high. So there's not many opponents there to fight. So that's why I sort of, once I finished up with the amateurs, I was like, oh, There's no more opponents to fight. I might as well turn professional.
When you turned pro, like, how confident were you that it was going to work, that you were going to have a good pro career?
Oh, look, I took each step as it is. I didn't set some stupid goals. Set realistic goals that I could achieve, and one thing led to another, and the goals just keep growing and growing, and I'm developing as a person, I'm developing as a fighter and as an athlete, and that's the whole process and journey is just keep developing and reach your full potential. See what you can reach.
So when did the goals become world championship? Because if you win on Saturday, your next fight most likely will be for a world title at 154. When did that become a goal of yours that you saw as realistic?
I think two years in. I didn't set a goal for myself to become straight away as a world champion. You know, that's that wasn't even in my mind at the moment. The first goal was to become the best in Australia, and then once I think that's when my eyes opened up, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take this to the next level. I came here to America, I did a few sparring sessions with different boys around here, and I felt confident and strong, and I just started believing in myself more, and one thing led to another, and now here we are fighting for that world number one position now.
So why was now the right time for you to come to the U.S.?
Look, I've taken on a few world title contenders, former world champions as well, and I haven't lost a round. You know, like if you watch my fights, I haven't lost a round in my last 8 fights. So I think this is the time to take that to the next level, to take that next step and take the next challenge.
The power that you've shown at this point in your career, did you expect that? Did you expect to kind of have that kind of pop as a professional?
It's all about, sometimes it's not about having the pop, it's having the right timing. Being able to land the certain shot at the certain time, you know, and being able to take the shot as well. So boxing's it's not all about power. It's so much more involved.
I read somewhere that you said you don't like having your father ringside at your fights. Why is that?
He's only been to one fight, but he was screaming his ass off. He was just too loud.
I can understand that. I mean, I remember watching, you know, the Chavez Jr. fights, and Chavez Sr. does not stop talking the entire time. It's got to be impossible for a coach to give his advice while dad is ringside.
Yeah, exactly. It's no good.
Has he given you any kind of thought, as someone that I think he fought, what, 10, 11 times in the U.S., has he given you any kind of, I don't know if advice is the right word, but any thoughts on fighting here?
Oh, look, he just said stay focused. The main thing is feeling good, getting your training right, and that's it, you know. The work in training shows up on fight night. So, yeah, that's all it is.
What is your kind of goal for fighting in the U.S.? Do you want to have big title fights in the U.S.? Do you want to bring big title fights to Australia? A little bit of both? How do you see kind of your career?
Yeah, a bit of both, man. A bit of both. I think we've set out a good platform in Australia. But I feel like if you want to take on the world, you've got to make it here in America. And one step at a time. And, you know, who knows how big we can go in here in America. So, you know, that's my next goal. It's my new chapter set out. And it's quite exciting for myself.
Well, looking forward to you making your U.S. debut on Saturday, Tim. Thanks for the time.
No, I appreciate it, man.
And when we come back, my picks for the week brought to you by FanDuel.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all. But I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top
not
of it.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. With just a few taps on the app, you can have Angie tackle your home service project start to finish.
With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. It's your one-stop shop. Angie can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. They get the difficulties that can come with home projects. They get it. Why not make it as simple as possible? Get started at Angie.com. That's Angi.com or download the app today.
All right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by our friends over at FanDuel. Last week, 1-1. I told you to bet Edgar Berlanga and bet him big, and he did come away with the win. But he didn't pick up the knockout, which I thought was a pretty good bet at that time. Part of that is Edgar Berlanga. maybe we overestimated his power a little bit. Part of that, Steve Rolls, who did not look like a fighter that really came to win, more came to survive. This week, I have got another one I am sure about. I am very, very sure about this pick. Josh Warrington against Kiko Martinez, IBF featherweight title. Bet your money on Josh Warrington. Now, he is a favorite, right around minus 400, according to FanDuel. But these two guys fought back in 2017. Warrington won a majority decision back then. Since then, I think Josh Warrington has gotten better. Yes, he does have that brutal loss to Mauricio Lara. And no, he didn't really avenge it in any meaningful way when he fought Lara in the rematch. But Kiko Martinez, he's coming off a win, a title-winning win over Kid Galahad. But I don't look at Kiko Martinez at 36 years old as being on the upswing by any stretch. So I am taking Josh Warrington to win by decision. Warrington by decision, a fight that you can watch on DAZN. That is your pick of the week, brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Dan Raphael and Tim Zhu for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And next week, if we can track him down, we'll bring you Sergio Mora.
Mannix, I'm a man on the run, and I'm not doing your fucking podcast. We're not doing it, bro. I'm a man on the run. On the run!
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win! Unbelievable!
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.